This is ESPN Radio's Barton Hahn Podcast.
Doings all over the place, breaking news all over the place. It is Bart and Hahn on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Chris Carlin in for the fellas today. Boy, we have got so much to cover at 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. The breaking news of the day involved, the Cleveland.
Can't wait.
Or now, the Cleveland Guardians. In case you're just joining us and you hadn't heard the news this morning, a little bit before 10 a.m. Eastern, the Cleveland baseball team, as it were, put out a tweet with a video that was narrated by Tom Hanks that outlined what they were going to do in terms of their history and their new franchise name. And they have opted to change to the Cleveland Guardians. And you know what? I dig it. I was talking to June Lee earlier on Greeny today, ESPN baseball writer, and we were discussing what some of the other names could have been. He was shooting for the Spiders, kind of liked what that could look like. But the most important thing that got accomplished here is that the name change happened. I know people get all caught up in this kind of stuff these days. You know, why are we changing everything and all that? Because things are insensitive to particular groups. And you have to put yourself in that position, in the position of people that would be offended by that. And not just the Chief Wahoo logo, but the Indians in general, changing the name, I give them all the credit in the world. And I love the fact that it's going to be the Guardians. It's kind of a cool name, and I think it's going to look good. If you've seen the logos, they do look very sharp. So well done by the Cleveland baseball team, as it were. They will start to be known as the Guardians at the beginning of the 2022 season. The NFL news yesterday was obviously big, putting out the memo to teams and to players that if a game in the coming season gets canceled and cannot be rescheduled inside the framework of the 18-game schedule, the team that is responsible for that game, in other words, the team with the outbreak of COVID for that game, if it is caused by unvaccinated players, they will forfeit that game. And it will be officially a loss on their record. More importantly, though, to the players, not just the players that are on the team that had the outbreak, but the players on the other team will not be getting their game checks. Whoa, that is the league absolutely laying down the gauntlet and, in essence, telling players, we cannot screw around with this anymore. You can't, by any stretch, force a person to get the vaccine, but you can do everything you can when you're working for a league that, or the rather the league can do everything they can for people working for them to encourage them. And encouraging them includes maybe not paying them if it happens. Is it pitting player versus player? A little bit. Because as we know, there are all kinds of opinions on this. And whatever your opinion is on the vaccine, everybody's entitled to it, right? But when it comes to working for a private organization, you really don't have much of a leg to stand on here. If I were to come to work for ESPN and they required a drug test and I didn't want to take it, I would be more than in my rights to walk away from the job. But I couldn't say to them, I refuse to take my drug test, but you're, you know, hurting my civil liberties here. No, that's an individual organization. And these are their rules. So that's what they are trying to get across here. The league is not forcing it, but the league is strongly encouraging it in every way possible. And you've already seen players that have spoken out against it. We saw what DeAndre Hopkins had to say yesterday, rethinking his future. And we also saw that members of the Buffalo Bills were kind of infighting about it. players who were pro-vaccine, players who were anti-vaccine. Here's Jeff Darlington on exactly what the reaction was here from the NFL Players Association.
Well, to me, one of the more interesting elements of it is the fact that the NFL Players Association has come forward and sent a memo to its contingency, its players, and said that really showed no animosity toward the NFL for this, basically saying these are similar rules to what were in play last year that were collectively bargained, and basically that's the way it's going to be. I don't sense much in terms of like the NFLPA planning to put on some kind of fight to defend players that are choosing to not get vaccinated.
Yeah, and the Players Association wants their players to get paid as well, and they want their players to be healthy, but the money is first and foremost. I mean, just listen to Ezekiel Elliott getting asked about it yesterday.
The hardest part about last year is just kind of feeling like you let your teammates down, and you know, that hurts. And you know, I want to make sure that I put my best step forward and do everything that I need to do to help this team win. I mean, you gotta experience the lows to enjoy the highs. So I mean, definitely had some lows last year, so I'm ready to experience the highs this year.
Well, that wasn't Zeke about it, but when he was asked about it, the first thing he said was, "Excuse me, game checks?" Yeah, it caught his attention pretty quickly, and you would expect that to be the case. But there's something to remember here. First of all, it is not a change, as we heard from Jeff Darlington. This was the same thing that was in place last year. Biggest thing that's different is that we have a vaccine now. But the other thing that you need to keep in mind, let's say a game does get canceled, right? And it can't be made up inside the framework of the 18-week season. With that being the case, somebody's going to lose big money there, right? The network that is paying the league for the package that they have, let's say they lost a big Sunday night game. Well, that's a lot of revenue that's not going to the network, and yet they've paid the league. Are they now going to get that money back? And if so, if the league is forcing that back, giving that money back to the particular network, that's a loss of money that is caused by unvaccinated players. So the players have to bear responsibility there, and I understand why the players wouldn't get paid in that instance. It's all trickle-down, right? The money that comes from the TV networks comes to the league, and a lot of it ends up with the players. That's how it works. So when you have a game, I mean, think about this for a second. The league did everything they could last year, got every game in, right? I talked about this earlier on Greeny. The games that are exceptionally important for networks during the regular season, as far as making money, well, obviously the Thursday night opener of the year would make them a lot of money. But the second most money that's made is the Thursday night Thanksgiving game that NBC has. Because why? All of that Black Friday advertising. They make a fortune on that. What happened last year? It was Baltimore and Pittsburgh. And that Thursday night game that was supposed to have all that great viewership and advertising for Black Friday got moved back 5 and 6 days to the following Wednesday at 3 o'clock. How much money do you think was lost there? And did NBC get their money back for that? I don't know for sure, but I'm willing to bet they didn't. So it is a trickle-down effect across the board, and ultimately it is no surprise that it is all about money, as it is in college football as well. It's time for some Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. In case you missed it, Oklahoma and Texas could very much be on the move, and they could be out of the Big 12. The announcement could come in as soon as a few weeks. Now, it wouldn't transpire for this year, obviously, but that's what the Austin American-Statesman reported this morning, and ESPN confirmed later that that could absolutely be the case. Am I thrown off at all by that? I am not. I am not surprised in the least. This has been going on for years and years and years. not just with these schools, but with other big schools. We've seen conferences poach other teams for how long to strengthen their position financially? And if you're Texas and you're Oklahoma, it's not just a great financial move, but it's also a move to strengthen your resume down the stretch for getting into the college football playoff, even with it expanding, because you're playing better teams. So for more on this, we bring in ESPN college football reporter Heather Dinich, who joins us right now with this Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Heather, it's Chris Carlin in for Barton Hahn today. Appreciate the time. So the latest is we could be very close to an announcement within a couple of weeks here. What are you hearing as this is unfolding seemingly by the moment with Texas and Oklahoma?
Well, you nailed it. It's unfolding by the moment, and information is changing by the hour. And I can tell you that right now, the athletic directors within the conference are just continuing to try to extract from Texas and Oklahoma, is this real? Are you leaving? Just tell us so we can get on with our plan for how to react to whatever the decision might be. And, you know, this could certainly come sooner than later. And I have heard from a source in the SEC that it is not accurate that Texas A&M was left out of these discussions for 6 months. And we'll, you know, we'll see what happens from here. But I certainly get the sense that this is on a fast track for something happening very soon.
Heather, are there actual roadblocks that would prevent it from happening?
You know, I think the roadblocks are the bylaws, which on paper in the Big 12, which ironically Oklahoma and Texas helped create, are you have to give 18-month notice that you would like to leave. And then the exit fee would be around $76 million per team for Texas and Oklahoma. Now, when you're talking about TV contracts and deals and SEC money, I'm sure you could figure a way to bring that number down or help them out, whatever it might be. But I can tell you, having lived in Maryland and covered Maryland, when Maryland went from the ACC to the Big Ten, the ACC's exit fee was $50 million. And Maryland went to court over it, and they wound up paying $31 million. So I've seen this happen before, and that number can certainly shrink. So, you know, the grant of rights, TV contract, the Big 12 bylaws, the exit fee, those are all very real things, but they're also things that lawyers can get involved in and negotiate.
Heather Dinich, ESPN college football reporter, joining us here on Barton Hahn on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Chris Carlin in for the guys today. Heather, for the SEC, as strong as it is to begin with, what does this bring? Is it just a matter of much more money and, frankly, just strengthening the overall conference?
I think those are the two main things. When you look at the possibility of a 12-team playoff, and by the way, we can't forget that we're in the feasibility phase of a 12-team playoff.
Yeah.
And if this were to happen, this would change people's opinions about what that would look like. And it just changed those discussions entirely. But if it does go to a 12-team playoff and you've got a 10-2 Oklahoma, a 9-3 Texas, who's to say there's not seven SEC teams with the potential to be in that? I mean, the domino effect here is astounding in terms of what could happen. And quite honestly, there is a sense out there from athletic leaders that it's not good for the grand scheme of college athletics, because we're not just talking about football. We're talking about student athletes at Army and Navy. And we're talking about the other group of five conferences and how this impacts them. And there's a sense that if this does go down and everyone scrambles, a lot of schools are going to be left in the dust.
Heather, yeah, that's next. You know, all of a sudden you'll have some schools getting poached up, but I'll get to that in one sec. The one thing that really threw me off is you have this meeting last night that didn't include Texas and Oklahoma, and they put it together, quote, because everybody was completely blindsided by this. How can you be blindsided by this when it's something that was talked about 5 years ago with Oklahoma to the Pac-12 and Texas, somewhere else. Shouldn't Bob Bowlesby's radar be up when the rumors first started 5 years ago?
Well, it's a fair question, but the way somebody in the league put it to me was, it's like your spouse cheating on you for 6 months, and then somebody says, wait, how do you even know this? You live with this person. You're like, oh, well, I don't know. I didn't know. And that's exactly the analogy that's been used. I mean, it was a week or so ago that every member of the conference was on a call together talking about how the 12-team playoff would benefit them. So I get it. It's a fair question, and it's one that deserves to be asked. But the truth of the matter is, those people on that meeting, on that video conference, were trying to figure out what's going on. They weren't on that call last night trying to lay out a precise plan for what they do if and when Oklahoma and Texas leave. They were trying to figure out, is this for real? Are they really leaving? If so, when, and what's their motivation? That was last night.
Wow. And who becomes the most attractive candidates? We're talking to Heather Dinich, college football reporter for ESPN. Of the other schools that are kind of left in the wake out of the Big 12 to end up in some of the other conferences, because this feels like it's headed for a minimum of 4 super conferences, if not all the way down to 3 at some point.
Right, and I think the question is, how quickly can the Big 12, if this happens, add teams, right? You know, they shallowly discussed Houston, Cincinnati, BYU, UCF, the same suspects that came up the last time the Big 12 talked about expanding. And if that happens, like, are those programs valuable enough that the Big 12 stays relevant? Or does what happens is Iowa State plucked away, right? And then that starts that domino effect and that wave of teams being poached from the Big 12, like you mentioned. I mean, to me, Iowa State is the top of the list right now, at least in my eyes, because of everything that they've done and what they have to offer and the upward trajectory that they've been on. But again, I operate in football tunnel vision. And it's important to remember along those lines that these decisions are made by university presidents. So we can talk about coaches and athletic directors and commissioners all day long, but at the end of the day, in each league, the presidents are the one who make these decisions, and they have to consider like-minded academic institutions. That's always lost in these discussions, but do you line up and match up with us academically is one thing the presidents focus on.
Heather, appreciate the insight. Terrific stuff. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much.
Heather Dinich, ESPN college football reporter. I'm sorry. This is going on 5 years ago. I remember at 2016 Big 12 Media Day, I was there, and this was being talked about at the time, that Texas and Oklahoma could potentially go somewhere else. With Oklahoma, there was talk about joining the Pac-12 at the time. Texas could leave too and join the SEC. And we're shocked by this? To me, that's on the member schools to be surprised by that. When you have two top-heavy schools at the very forefront of your conference, and it can hurt their potential to make the college football playoff moving forward, no matter what the format looks like, because they're not playing good enough competition, because they're playing Kansas State. That's an issue. Do you think a big win in Lawrence, Kansas is going to go a long way for Oklahoma? Of course not. Here's Paul Feinbaum yesterday on his show, just really laying out what the ripple effects of this are.
It changes everything, because you lose your best two schools from the Big 12, and you really have virtually nothing to stand on. I mean, somebody tell me who the power broker in the Big 12 would be if this really goes on. And so then the ACC and the Big 10 are going, we've got to do something. The Big 10 is not going to sit around and let the SEC run over it. So I think there's going to be a mad dash trying to find who is attractive. The problem, Kevin, is this. There's not many attractive schools out there. The only one I could think of who's unattached at the moment is Notre Dame. And this is a conversation that has gone on ad nauseum about Notre Dame joining a conference.
And Notre Dame is never going to do anything to join a conference full time. They have gone as far as they will with the ACC and playing those games. Absolutely crazy. Absolutely crazy. And look, you know, you're going to see schools like Oklahoma State get picked off, but, you know, West Virginia and the ACC, could you see that? You absolutely could. There will be a couple of those schools that will find homes, but not all of them. Iowa State in the Big Ten, rivalry with Iowa, yeah, you could see that. But the other ones are going to be left looking for a home as, you know, the music plays and there's no chairs left. Chris Carlin in for Barton Hahn at 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Man, we have got a jam-packed show today. We've got Yankees, Red Sox to get to. We've got Major League Baseball trade line to get to. We've got more regarding all of the fallout from the COVID-19 memo sent out by the NFL yesterday, and we're going to cover more of that next. Heather Dinich, moments ago, was bringing us to Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. So what exactly will the fallout be in locker rooms around the league? Players infighting about vaccines? Our NFL insider joins us in a moment. Chris Carlin, in for the fellas. Able to speak at some points. That really works for radio. On ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Bart and Hahn.
Unvaccinated players create an outbreak. A team could be forced to forfeit. And if that happens, players from both teams will miss their game checks.
You say game checks?
Yeah.
you just told me something new. But like I said, it's everyone's body. You got to respect that. You can't just, a check is only monetary. You know what I mean? So you can't put a price on someone's health or, you know, what they think will make them feel good or not make them feel good. So, that's, like I said, you're kind of walking the tight line.
Yeah, actually, Zeke Elliott and every other NFL player does put a price on their health, whether or not he realizes that. It is Barton Hahn on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. Save when you bundle auto, home, motorcycle insurance. You can do it all. Visit progressive.com. Chris Carlin in for Barton Hahn today. Let us welcome in on the Goodyear Hotline ESPN NFL reporter Jeff Darlington, who joins us right now. And Jeff, what have been the early reactions from players, from management, from people that you've spoken to toward the NFL's memo yesterday that was sent out regarding the potential COVID cancellations?
Yeah, man. So I'm really glad you just played that clip from Ezekiel Elliott, because I feel like that, the NFL couldn't have scripted that better. That was exactly what the point of this whole thing was. So our ESPN's Ed Werder asked him about the memo, and Zeke says, like, let's break the whole thing down here. Zeke goes, game checks?
Yep.
That's it. That's what the NFL was hoping to get across. And then he says right after that, you just told me something new. But guess what? This isn't new. As the NFL Players Association pointed out to his membership shortly after the league's memo went out, is that this is the exact same protocol that was in place a year ago that was collectively bargained, that if teams had to forfeit games due to a COVID outbreak. Now, the league added unvaccinated players in their language. Well, guess what? Last season, every player was unvaccinated because there was no vaccine. So they were also going to have to forfeit game checks, but the league managed to find ways to creatively get around it, and they did it in a 17-week season. So this year, right now, more than 80% of the league, of the players, have at least started the vaccination program. There's only five teams that are under the 70% threshold for vaccines. So like, yes, it was powerful language that the NFL used. Yes, it seemed to catch the players by surprise. But by all means, this is nothing new. This is just the league trying to get across the message that, hey, the best thing you can do right now, if you want this to be a perfect season, is to get vaccinated.
And the players are probably also thinking at the time, well, we got every game in last year when we didn't have a vaccine, so this wouldn't have even struck their mind. This is really the league with a preemptive strike, isn't it, Jeff?
Seemingly, but again, like, if you hear the way Zeke, I mean, think about like what DeAndre Hopkins said. Like,
yep.
This, he tweeted and then deleted that this is making me consider my future in the NFL. Like, what? Like, what do you, like, you did this last year. Like, you could have also opted out. I mean, when the players had the chance to opt out, they had all this same information. If they were that concerned about not getting the vaccine and going through. I mean, I don't know what the expectation was for the players who have not gotten vaccinated. Did they expect that if there was a big outbreak that, like, that it would be different than it was last year? So I think from that standpoint, players probably just needed a minute to digest it before they started to understand the reality of it. And maybe that's why Hop ended up deleting the tweet. But really, again, nothing has changed here. So onward.
Jeff Darlington, ESPN NFL reporter, joining us on the Goodyear Hotline. Chris Carlin in for Barton Hahn today. With that being said, we even saw members of the Bills last night seemingly Twitter fighting about this. Do you think this is going to be a problem in a couple of locker rooms?
I don't know. I mean, again, I don't want to put my own. Like, I don't really understand in a locker room if guys have been vaccinated. That, like, if more than, I don't know, it feels to me like it's not going to be, if it wasn't a problem last season, yes, I understand, I'm trying to continue to take things seriously in terms of COVID protocols, but, like, if the players who have not been vaccinated are still going through the same protocols, the same testing regimen, you would think that there would be a similar outcome to last year, which was ultimately a success as a result of those protocols. Is there going to be infighting in the locker rooms? Like, man, that feels like something that these teams need to find a way to get past really fast.
Jeff Darlington with us. All right, let's shift to some actual football with everything starting on the field. Because we have to ask it, and because it just won't stop being a story, Jeff, Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, we've heard from a lot of different people with opinions on it. So what's your opinion? What is the end game here before the start of the 2021 season?
So, that question, what is the end game? Like, I feel like we keep asking each other that question, and that's all the question I keep asking myself, is, like, what is the end game? Like, where has anything shifted in terms of leverage? Like, where has Aaron said anything in terms of what he'll do with, you know, right now on the cusp of training camp? Like, I keep waiting for the ace in the sleeve from Aaron Rodgers, and I don't know what that's going to be, because as it stands right now, the first day that he misses training camp, it's a $50,000 fine, unforgivable. The new collective bargaining agreement makes it so that they cannot give that money back to him. That's $1.75 million if he misses camp, and then obviously the money continues to go up to where he could potentially wind up losing $30 million if he does not play this year. So, like, I still don't understand, and I don't know what I'm missing here. I don't understand how Aaron Rodgers is not in a Packers uniform week one of the regular season.
Jeff Darlington, ESPN NFL reporter, with us on Bart and Hahn. Jeff, two divisions that really intrigue me are the AFC East and the NFC East. What is your read right now, first of all, on the AFC East, what the lineup is behind the Bills right now? Are the Patriots actually capable of contending? And Same thing with the Dolphins, just based on the quarterback situation.
Yeah, like I keep asking myself, what has changed since last season? And we know, obviously, that both the Patriots and the Dolphins have tried to make significant upgrades. The question is, are those enough to catch up with the Bills? And I don't know that they are. Like, it's definitely going to have to be a I'll believe it when I see it situation. Like, I totally respect the fact that the Patriots added offensive weapons, that their defense should be really solid. But, like, what are we doing at quarterback? You know, what is Cam Newton? Why do we expect Cam Newton to be significantly better? Maybe a year in the system will do that. Maybe Mac Jones is the stud in waiting. You know, the Dolphins, same question. Why should we expect Tua to be better? Certainly more time in a normal off season for him after having to do the full rehab last year of his hip makes it seem like he should be better. He's got Jalen Waddle. That should help. But in general, until those teams show that they're better, this right now feels to me like the Bills' division.
Jeff, what about the NFC East? The Giants, where do they match up right now? When you're looking at Washington with a great defense and a good, but a quarterback issue, and you look at the Cowboys, who on paper should be much better, but we have said that every year for the last 24 years.
I know. And like this year, I really believe it. It's so funny. Like I actually find myself really bullish on the Cowboys. I'm like, why am I doing this to myself? Like, I'm not like by any means like a Cowboys guy. Like, I don't really care, but like, I feel like I'm buying into them more than usual. And in Washington, I feel like just the Ron Rivera system, Ryan Fitzpatrick's, you know, so we'll see. Like, both those teams to me should be better than the Giants, barring some breakout season from Daniel Jones. Saquon being back is going to be awesome. He's just a monster. I think sometimes we might forget that. But again, it's like, is this division going to be good, or is it going to be at the end of the season, who can get the 9 wins and get a playoff berth? Like, I have no idea.
Jeff, last one. As a reporter, which story around the league are you most intrigued by that maybe isn't getting the preseason attention that it should?
Ooh, that's a good question. I feel like I've just hammered every single storyline to death. There is nothing surprising, but I still do wonder about Deshaun Watson. Like, I know that's an obvious storyline, but like, what happens there? Like Tuesday is when the Texans report, and we don't even know if Deshaun Watson is on the commissioner's exempt list. Like, he's going to have to show up to camp unless he gets added to that list. And if he shows up, like, he's got 22 civil lawsuits against him and he doesn't want to be there. Like, that's crazy. That's wild. And to me, it's like, where does that thing end? And where will Deshaun Watson be playing? Not necessarily week one, but where will he be playing week 18 of the 2021 season?
Jeff, awesome insight. Appreciate it as always. Thanks for a few minutes.
Yeah, thanks, man. Appreciate you.
Yep. Jeff Darlington, ESPN NFL reporter, joining us via the Goodyear Hotline. Goodyear helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Chris Carlin for the fellas today. Barton Hahn on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Put a tent on Fenway Park because it got to be a circus late last night. And the ringmaster was a guy named Brooks Kreisky. We'll tell you about it next. ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Bart and Hahn.
Well, we got breaking news all over the place today. All over the place. Bart and Hahn, ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. At Progressive, they're making things even easier. They'll help you bundle your home and car insurance together so you can save on both. Learn more at progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. This just moments ago from Jeff.
Can't wait, can't wait, can't wait.
The New York Mets are finalizing a deal to acquire starter Rich Hill from the Tampa Rays, sources telling ESPN. And that appears to be Tommy Hunter and a double-A pitcher headed back to the Rays. Rich Hill, who has been in baseball since the Carter administration, it seems, is still somebody that will be exceptionally strong for the Mets here. And here's why. This is a very good move. Rich Hill is a left-handed starter who is not costing you a fortune in terms of what you're trading. When he has been on the field, he has been consistent, which is why you're getting him for a cheap price. There have been injury concerns over the years for Rich Hill. But this season, 19 starts, 95 innings, 75 hits, ERA 3.87. And this is also somebody that has a very good postseason resume with 12 career starts and an ERA of 3.06, last coming in 2019 with the Dodgers. I love this move for the Mets. Love it. You're adding a starter who could be on the back end of the rotation. And if you're asking for a, if you're having Jacob DeGrom back and you have Stroman and you have Taijuan Walker as well as he has pitched, and Rich Hill is a game four starter in a playoff series, you're doing damn well. That is a fantastic move for the New York Mets. Absolutely love that in every way possible because they needed a starting pitcher in the worst way. And this is somebody that, again, and I caution, if he stays healthy, because that has been a concern. He has so far this year. If he stays healthy, it will work. And if he doesn't, you really did not lose a whole lot in return. So this is fantastic. And not to mention the fact that he's a left-handed starter. You don't know what you're going to get with Carlos Carrasco coming back. You don't know what you're going to get if Noah Syndergaard comes back in September when he hasn't pitched in virtually 2 years. This gives you more of a known quantity without having to completely empty out the prospects that you have at the top level of the minor leagues. And you can still go big game hunting here if you're the Mets, but this is a very, very solid move for the Mets. We've got plenty on the Yankees in Boston as well on the way. Carlin in for Barton Hahn, ESPN Radio.